Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than 100 prominent Jewish Americans have signed a letter to, quote, highlight and oppose the unprecedented and damaging role of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, and its allied groups in U.S. elections, especially within Democratic primaries. They write, "We recognize that the purpose of AIPAC's interventions in electoral politics is to defeat any critics of Israeli government policy and to support candidates who vow unwavering loyalty to Israel, thereby ensuring the United States' continuing support for all that Israel does, regardless of its violence and illegality." Joining us to talk about this and to talk about what is happening in Gaza is Alan Minsky, Executive Director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of the statement. Hi, Alan. Thank you for joining us. And we're joined by Rabbi Alyssa Wise, who signed the statement. Rabbi Wise is the lead organizer of Rabbis for Ceasefire, an organization of 317 rabbis and Jewish clergy speaking out with one voice to save lives. Rabbi Wise's forthcoming book, co-authored with Rebecca Vill-Comerson, is called Solidarity is the Political Version of Love, Lessons from Jewish Anti-Zionist Organizing. It comes out in May. Rabbi Wise has been an organizer for the past two decades. Hi, Rabbi Wise. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I want to get just your overall thoughts about where we are right now. The official death toll in Gaza is over 32,000, including 12,000 children. At least 27 people, including children and babies, have died from starvation and dehydration in the north. More than 1 million people face catastrophic levels of hunger. There's just so many statistics. 80% of buildings in the north have been damaged or destroyed. 99 hospitals have been damaged. Rabbi Wise, you've been working on this nonstop. How are you processing all of this?
Yeah, thank you. You know, it is, you know, I think about the statistics that you just shared as kind of a litany that I feel like really like spiritually obligated to wrestle with every day, right? And it's like, as this has gone on 6 months, it's really hard to imagine when this began in October that this would still be happening at the scale of brutality and devastation that it is 6 months on. And I think the most important thing is that we don't normalize it, that we don't allow it to just happen in the background, right? And it needs to be in the forefront of our minds. The implications of this horror on the people of Gaza, primarily, right? For like, that's the most central piece right now, is we have to stop the suffering of the people of Gaza and save lives. And then from there, the ripple effects of this horror. And I think that, you know, this effort that Alan was part of initiating of Jewish Americans calling out AIPAC is so important because, you know, a quick story is that last week I was in D.C. Lobbying Congress for ceasefire and, you know, sharing with them the same statistics that you just shared with us. And that same day, AIPAC was on the Hill lobbying, right? So we were kind of passing each other in the halls and seeing each other go from meeting to meeting. And then it turned out that the AIPAC lobbyists were going in to talk with the elected officials about is claiming that it's a lie that Gazans are starving. They literally were lying to members of Congress. The important thing is that to understand about AIPAC is they are not a Jewish organization. They don't represent Jewish communal interests. They're really a far right political organization that they're warmongers and extremists who are lying to members of Congress in violation of what is clear fact of the death of children from starvation and malnutrition. And what the United Nations and so many other human rights organizations have said is at a critical level of crisis of food insecurity. So it's outrageous, you know, the lies that they get away with, sharing. And I think that's why it's so important that there's an effort to really stop the kind of stranglehold that AIPAC has in Congress.
That is Rabbi Alyssa Wise, lead organizer of Rabbis for Ceasefire. We're also joined by Alan Minsky, executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America. Alan, how are you processing all of this? And then if you can tell us how this letter came about.
Yes, well, everything that's been going on in, I was actually at the Democratic National Committee has annual meetings, not just quadrennial. I was at the annual meeting, which happened to have been in my hometown of St. Louis on October 7th. I had so many things that we were going to get done in October and November, and I don't think that checklist has yet been completed. For an organization like PDA, you just never know how history is going to turn. I mean, obviously, we were tracking what was going on in Israel and Palestine before October 7th and then the Israeli government's response to it. And it's just it's an unbearable historical tragedy. It's horrible. And, the act of war crimes being committed ongoing every day from my point of view, my perspective on things. And we do need to be honest in the United States of America. And this also really goes to the core of what we're trying to achieve in this letter. When you look at people in the United States, democratic society, supposedly in charge of our foreign policy, people in the United States have to understand that we are absolutely isolated in the international community in what has been what's been called a blank check support for Israel. And there are other countries, the United Kingdom and Germany, that come close to the level of, unwavering support. But the significance of their support is much lower than the United States. Israel and its ability to pursue the policies it's been pursuing, before the response to October 7th, the expansion of the settlements, which of course are breaking international law there, is entirely dependent upon support from the United States. And, so we're supporting a country that is regularly accused of breaking international law. Many other analysts all around the world are virulently critical of Israeli government policy towards the Palestinians. How is it that in our democratic society, we are locked in to this blank check support for Israel, or have been? Yes, things are shifting, but boy, if it takes the nonstop 5-month tragedy of what we've been witnessing to shift things, why is it, though, it really is the power of what, by the way, the two political scientists, Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer, had previously called the Israel lobby. It's just one of the most successful lobbies in American society. The NRA lobby, the oil company lobbies, the whole healthcare industry lobbies. AIPAC and AIPAC affiliated organizations are right up there. By the way, on the letter and going forward, we will refer to it as AIPAC and AIPAC affiliated organizations, because since that book was written in 2006, J Street is simply in a different category than the organizations that we're targeting. And so the Israel lobby is just not an operative term now. So AIPAC and AIPAC affiliated organizations, how can a lobby be that powerful when, again, it's so out of sync, at least with the public declarations of what U.S. foreign policy is supposed to support and what public in the United States would support, I think, if people were well informed about the situation in Israel-Palestine, refused to have us give this blank check support continually. But you have to understand, this lobby has been, you look at it as like status quo ante has been established. So what the AIPAC lobby and AIPAC affiliated groups do when they lobby Congress, and then they influence the whole process through the money that they invest in election campaigns, which has gone up astronomically in the last 3 years, is they're just having to hold the status quo ante. And, woe is the politician who breaks away from that two-party consensus, because that's really at the core of what this letter is about. Because in the last 3 years, they've recognized there's a political movement, a vibrant political movement in the United States of America, this sort of reborn left progressive movement, post the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign, post the election of the squad into the House of Representatives, that is not willing to walk in lockstep with the two-party consensus around Israel, held in place by this super powerful and effective, by the way, it has to be said, everything they do is within the law. This is no accusation of a conspiracy theory. That's here at all. They are operating within the U.S. laws for lobbying. They do a lot of media critique. And of course, they are involved in funding campaigns now very, very actively with huge tranches of money. But yeah.
Just to share a few facts, Slate reports that AIPAC is expected to spend $100 million in the 2024 Democratic primaries with the goal of ousting incumbents and eliminating progressive candidates. The Guardian reports that AIPAC has thrown its support behind Republicans with extremist views, including members of Congress with ties to white supremacist groups and representatives who attempted to block Biden's election victory on the grounds that the singular issue of support for Israel trumps other considerations. Yesterday, Congressman Mark Pocan tweeted that what AIPAC purposely fails to mention is that they support 100 election deniers and 200 anti-choice incumbents, in addition to spending money against some Democrats for other Democrats. Toxic money, conservative dark money. Rabbi Wise, what else can you tell us about this letter that you all signed onto and what you're hoping comes from it? Are you hoping that it just gets people understand how this whole process works, given that it is hard to track all of this dark money?
Yeah, so I think actually what you were just pointing us to as far as the way that AIPAC is in unholy alliances, that actually put Jewish safety actually in peril, right? And I think that's actually, you know, a key concern of mine, you know, as a rabbi and someone who has decided to dedicate my life to serving and taking care of Jewish people is Jewish safety. And what I see from AIPAC is that, and what I think is important to understand, is that they care about the Israeli state. They don't care about Jewish safety. They are willing to, you know, play Russian roulette, right, with Jewish safety and make these alliances with the right wing that has been the most dangerous element to American Jews in the past decade. You know, the violent anti-Semitism of the right. And it is a kind of Israel do or die, right? And this is part of a larger, you know, strategy of conflation, right, of Judaism and Zionism. And it's really important that we are crystal clear that Judaism is a centuries-old religious and cultural tradition, and Zionism is a political ideology that began in the 19th century, right? And for me, I feel like right now in this moment, this has been true my whole life as a rabbi and as an activist, is wanting to kind of decouple Judaism in Israel. And I think that right now, since October 7th, that work is more urgent than ever. And AIPAC is one of the most powerful threats to that. And I think part of what the progressive movement more broadly over the past decade has been doing is kind of being able to kind of build the relationships across faith, across race, across movement, where we're able to kind of actually have a real conversation about what it takes to build safety. And that answer is solidarity, right? And the cross-movement relationships, right? And so this AIPAC effort is actually a fruit of that labor, right? So there's a larger campaign called Reject AIPAC, which is a broad progressive coalition that is coming together to demand that Democratic elected officials don't take money from AIPAC and that they pledge to not take money from AIPAC. So I see this letter as buoying of that larger effort, right? And a really rejection of the claim, which I think, you know, we're doing in the Jewish community, those of us standing for ceasefire and standing with Palestinian people and with Israelis for a future of life and dignity and freedom. We are crystal clear, right, that in order for us to have a world, a future worthy of the coming generations, we need to be able to be arm in arm across issue, across struggle that lead us to dignity, right, and safety. And I think that right now I'm extremely concerned that the efforts of AIPAC are sending us in a dangerous direction. And I'm hopeful that the progressive movement that has been thriving over the past decades will rise again to defend democracy and to reject AIPAC.
Rabbi Alyssa Wise is lead organizer of Rabbis for Ceasefire. She signed the letter of 100 prominent Jewish Americans to highlight and oppose the unprecedented and damaging role of AIPAC and its allied groups in U.S. elections, especially within Democratic Party primaries. I'm just reading from the letter there. Alan Minsky is executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of this statement. If you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. Questions about AIPAC, what do you think about this letter, and just what is happening in Israel and Gaza overall. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Rabbi Wise, what you just laid out there about separating Zionism and Judaism, I wonder what response you're getting. What are you hearing from Jewish Americans, well, and just Jews in general, about what you just laid out there? Because we've done a lot of shows about this, and you know, we get emails from people who say exactly what Netanyahu is saying, that in order to secure safety for Israel, that the Israeli government has no choice but to continue bombing Gaza. So what are you hearing from Jews across the board, but especially Jews with those views?
Yeah, so, you know, I think I want to clarify that I think something really important is that there's never been consensus on this issue and truly any issue in the Jewish community. And that has been true since the onset of Jewish Zionism, right? So when Jewish Zionism came onto the scene, right, Zionism actually began as a movement in the Christian community through Christian Zionists. And from the beginning, when the idea was that Jews in Europe should support the establishment of a Jewish state in historic Palestine, it took a lot of convincing of lots of different segments of the Jewish community at that time to get behind it. And that has always been true. There's always been debate and disagreement. And I think that right now we are in a moment where it's really impossible to stay in the middle, right? You see, we are seeing a live streamed slaughter of Palestinian people and suffering, right? The suffering is the part that is so difficult to stomach. You see these images of children who are, you know, intense burns and need amputations, and there's no medicine, there's no morphine. People are dying in agony, you know, and a lot of people are saying it's better to die if you're injured in Gaza than to suffer injuries. You know, the moral crisis, the human crisis can't be overstated. And I think that what we are hearing in the American Jewish community is, the sounds of a rupture, right? There's a rupture happening in the American Jewish community, that the reverberations of which will probably take years to resolve. But what I know from it is that we are in a time of moral crisis. And I have no doubt that there's going to be a time when even those who are championing this violence, this war, this onslaught will come to one day look in the mirror and say to themselves, what have we done? What have we done? What have we allowed to happen in full sight? And so what's happening now is a segment of the Jewish community that has been building incrementally over decades is kind of coming into its power. Since October 7th, Jews have been in the streets in full embodiment of our Jewishness. We have our whole histories with us, and our whole knowing that our ancestors didn't survive persecution so that we could become oppressors. And the polling is showing that, you know, there is an actual divide, that it's like 50-50 split in the current American Jewish community, which frankly hasn't always been true on this issue, right? So this is a time where people are being called to conscience. And, you know, I think that the October 7th attack in its brutality kind of triggered this kind of age old fear and trauma in Jewish people. And the spiritual work and the moral work for us as rabbis that we're doing with our communities is to support people to push through their fear and through their trauma in order to figure out how do we want future generations to live. And there's no doubt that the violence that Israel is reaping on Gaza, that it makes Jews less safe in the world. It makes Israelis less safe, and it makes future generations less safe. The kind of, you know, the hatred and the violence and the vitriol that is being stoked in this conflict will take generations to heal. We're just passing on a future of war, of hatred, of violence is my worst fear. And so right now, my work is like as much as I can to gather the Jews together with our multi-faith partners, with our friends of conscience across movement, and say together, there's another way possible, and we need to do it for the sake of our children.
Well, Rabbi Wise, I know you have another appointment, so we will let you go. Rabbi Wise is lead organizer of Rabbis for Ceasefire, an organization of 317 rabbis and Jewish clergy speaking out with one voice to save lives. Her forthcoming book, co-authored with Rebecca Vilcomerson, is called Solidarity is the Political Version of Love, Lessons from Jewish Anti-Zionist Organizing. It comes out in May. Rabbi Wise, we'd love to have you back to talk about your book. Thank you so much for joining us.
It'd be great to be back again. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Alan Minsky is executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of the statement signed by 100 prominent Jewish Americans about AIPAC. Alan, just listening to Rabbi Wise there, what would you like to add?
Oh, my. Well, first of all, such eloquence and such, I think, you know, again, a politics to me, that are reflective of Martin Luther King Jr., a politics of love and compassion for all people, just so beautifully expressed by Rabbi Wise. There's a lot of the political, pragmatic components of this letter that it takes some amount of time to go into, but I certainly think in terms of what's transpiring right now, and actually, I could say to you as well, and something that doesn't get checked off in the absolutely appalling world historical tragedy that is continuing to unfold in Gaza, is the slaughter of journalists. Mm. I mean, it is, I think it's, I hate to even use a sports metaphor, it's like setting records with the killing of journalists. And this, again, Jewish Americans are, I think everybody listening to this probably knows, one of the most progressive voting blocs and constituencies in the country. In among Jewish Americans, there is a term that's sort of becoming increasingly well known in recent years, which is PEP, P-E-P, Progressive Except for Palestine. So this has sort of been an issue that is, if you look at it, and yet I very much understand why for Jewish Americans, many of whom were raised really just being told from birth that Israel was the shining light of a place. And that's very difficult to, you know, have that in your life, your entire life, and then wake up to the reality that we have right now. And I do know a lot of Jewish Americans who are really struggling with that component of what's been transpiring. It's, yes, October 7th was traumatic and horrible, absolutely horrible. Obviously a set of horrible war crimes. And then but then for the Israelis, for Jews to do this to the Palestinians, I know many people who've been broadly supportive of Israel their entire life. This is a real crisis to witness that aspect of it, the response of the Israelis, the slaughter of innocent civilians across Gaza. But in the letter too, and this should be said now because it hasn't been said yet, AIPAC and AIPAC affiliated organizations and their allies, what do they do when there's effective criticism of Israeli government policy? Well, one tactic, a consistent tactic for them, is to call the people voicing it anti-Semitic. Okay. And in terms of the Reject AIPAC coalition, which Progressive Democrats of America is a part of, and this was in fact released in some with coordination with the Reject AIPAC coalition that came out and was introduced itself to the world just early last week, to have Jewish Americans also speak out and to speak against AIPAC is something that we can do, because it's more difficult to accuse brilliant people like Rabbi Wise of being anti-Semitic. I myself was raised entirely, you know, just the very fabric of my life, the air I breathe has been Jewish American culture. As I got, I was raised in a secular Jewish house, but as I got older, I read a lot of Jewish philosophy, including sacred texts. And I'm absolutely the person I am as a product of Jewish American culture and now global Jewish culture as well. And many of my favorite authors from around the world are Jewish authors. The music, the comedy, everything, right? The Jewish American culture. And of course, for me, a bedrock of that culture is the commitment to the civil rights movement that was so pronounced among Jewish Americans in the 60s. The commitment and the general, well, look, progressive movements, left radical movements in the United States of America. Jewish Americans are about 2 to 2.5% of the population. Anybody who's even been remotely close to a left progressive movement across issue after issue after issue in the United States of America, Jewish Americans are massively overrepresented in them. And it's just very much a part in this commitment, again, to the human rights, the civil rights of all people, to the general welfare of communities. And again, a simply the most left voting bloc among white Americans. So there's this disconnect with AIPAC, affiliated with MAGA, support for MAGA candidates. Many of the people who are making major contributions into the AIPAC and AIPAC-affiliated PACs support very conservative politicians, and they almost never support progressive Democrats. They will support, of course, centrist and moderate and more conservative Democrats. So that is a disconnect with the general political temperature of the Jewish American community. And one of the things that's happening now, you know, in putting out this statement, is we are also, you know, we're asking people, again, the ethics, the tradition of support for human rights and civil rights in the Jewish community, let's look again at what's going on in Israel and Gaza. And the first point is, what's been going on has not been working. If anybody can't see, I can't imagine anybody is unable to see that at this point. And then, so let's look at it afresh. And let's think about a new American policy, because we are Americans, we're inside this democratic polity, and ask of our politicians that they support an approach to the region that absolutely demands full human civil rights, self-determination for the Palestinian people, and yes, land. And let's approach it not as one group having such dominance and us in alliance with that group, but to approach it differently and to seek seriously peace in the region and to advocate for that and to ask Jewish Americans to do that. And if that means going against the current Israeli government, it will be for the welfare of, I think, again, who can think that what's going on now is to the welfare of the Jewish people who are in the region?
We're going to take a quick break. Alan Minsky is executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of a open letter opposing the Israel lobby AIPAC. It was signed by more than 100 prominent Jewish Americans, and you can find the letter at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're joined by Alan Minsky, Executive Director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of a letter opposing the Israel lobby AIPAC. You can find that letter at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions or comments for Alan, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about AIPAC, just where we are right now with Israel and Gaza? The death toll is over 32,000, including 12,000 children. At least 27 people, including children and babies, have died from starvation and dehydration in the north. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We've got a few emails. Tim writes, "It sickens me that we are still sending bombs to Israel." On that note, Timothy, Jacobin had a piece this morning called "Joe Biden is shipping weapons to Israel every 36 hours. the Biden administration has been able to maintain a low profile by spreading arms provisions to Israel across more than 100 smaller munitions sales, allowing the president to posture as a peacekeeper while U.S. weapons wipe Gaza off the map. That's according to Stephen Semler at Jacobin. Timothy goes on to write, "My wife and son are Jewish, and they share my abhorrence at this ongoing tragedy. This cannot continue, but as long as we're willing to stay silent about what's happening, then we all have to live with our guilt. Someday it will come back to haunt all of us. Also, if any Palestinians survive, wouldn't they spend their lives seeking revenge? I know I would if you killed my family, my village, my crops." Another email from Penny says, "What do you think regarding why Biden hasn't taken a stronger stance against the bombing and horrific conditions in Gaza, losing votes from the Jewish faction in the upcoming election? We should not be sending any dollars to support what Netanyahu is doing." Alan, your response?
Well, actually, very proudly, PDA and actually our affiliated Progressives for Democracy in America, 501c4, was the original fiscal sponsor of the original effort of the uncommitted vote in this election cycle in the presidential race, and that we were the fiscal sponsors for the vote ceasefire campaign, which launched in the first primary in New Hampshire and helped inspire the commitment to the uncommitted vote, as it were, in Michigan. And I think that vote in a swing state had a huge impact, at least on the rhetoric. Unfortunately, now, just the rhetoric, because, you know, at one point about maybe 10 days ago, Biden did an interview and he said, a ground attack on Rafah was Rafah is the place now in the southern Gaza Strip, pressed up against the Egyptian border, where about 3/4, almost maybe 70% of the Gazan population is now basically fled to. Wasn't one of the larger population centers within the Gaza Strip previously. Now it has 70% of the population. And he said that ground invasion, it would be a red line. But he then quickly said, but we'll keep sending weapons to Israel. Well, the red line should be, because this war that Israel is engaging against Gaza and Hamas is with the, I mean, obviously, they're saying it's a war against Hamas. The level of collateral damage and the slaughter of innocent civilians is off the charts. So, war against the people in Gaza. And, you know, the weapons should not be continuing to be sent. Until that happens, sadly, rhetorical shifts are meaningless. And, of course, in the United States, in our system, the executive branch, it can, unilaterally make those decisions. So yes, President Biden has to shift from just a rhetorical shift to a policy shift. And in the whole totality of the past period in Israeli history, the era, post Rabin, when the Likud party is ascendant, leading to the now long stretch of Netanyahu's being the dominant political figure in Israel, the United States, Israel became increasingly and almost wholly reliant upon the United States for the continuation of policies that the international community were regularly condemning overwhelmingly. And so Israel became dependent, not really two major things, which is the arms, the military arms, because obviously Israel is a very small state. They can't produce the arms that we produce here in the United States, and they get the backbone of their military hardware comes from the United States. And the other thing, of course, is the United States remains, and people talk about the relative decline of America in the international, its international standing. The United States remains the central country in the world system of countries, as it were, the most powerful country in the world. And it has a singularity in its support for Israel. And so in the international community of nations, Israel is entirely reliant on that political support from the most powerful country in the world. Again, we're supposedly a democratic society, and this should be something that is a part of the political dialogue. It gets pretty marginalized, by the way, in terms of being a central issue until there's a major conflagration. And of course, this is the worst we've seen yet. Been terrible conflagrations in recent years over there, can dominate the headlines for a couple months, and then it sort of falls back into not being on the front pages, so to speak, anymore. And of course, again, this is the worst instance of it, and it's a horror show. And it also signifies what we should have known a long time ago, that U.S. policy towards Israel should shift. We should, as it says in the final paragraph of the statement, we need to shift our foreign policy, you know, to what it claims to be on paper, but it hasn't been. We all know in many theaters around the world, the United States, and certainly the progressive movement, and let's get back to that in a second, is, of course, the progressive movement is very committed to shifting U.S. foreign policy to really meaningfully support the human rights of all people. And when there's a part of the world where people's human rights are not being, they're being trampled upon, and their civil rights, and they have no right to self-determination, and they're basically oppressed in their homeland, we can't be supporting those policies. And the progressive movement in this letter, we at PDA and the people we worked on with it, which includes a few members from the leadership of Jewish Voice for Peace and an organization called Roots Action, we were committed to writing this going into the 2024 cycle, because in the 2022 cycle, and we haven't highlighted this hour, unprecedented amounts of money were dropped into congressional races very explicitly against progressive candidates, against candidates whose politics were very similar to the members of the squad, or if you like, you know, Senator Sanders in general, in terms of domestic progressive politics, and also a foreign policy that, again, emphasizes kind of human rights approach more than other, groups in American politics, federal politics. And it was unprecedented. And again, this is, October 7th hasn't happened. But in this lobbying group, which is supposedly all about supporting the state of Israel, they would often put ads and just absolutely saturate media markets with ads, often scurrilous attack ads against the progressive candidates, not mentioning Israel and Palestine at all. But it was clearly coming from this channel. This is all very well documented. This is not a conspiracy theory at all. In fact, we include documentation on the letter.
Alan, we actually talked about AIPAC spending a lot of money against Democrat Andy Levin, who is the most progressive Jewish congressperson in D.C., a self-described Zionist. And a number of media organizations have so much reporting about what happened in his race, and he lost.
Well, is he one of the things about Andy Levin? Great guy. There is a bill that's been in Congress in recent years, and it's been introduced by Betty McCollum, a representative from Minnesota. And it's sad because it's really such a mild bill. It just says that there should be no money given to Israel that can be, that money gets used in ways that harm Palestinian children. Okay? That's all it says. And no Jewish member, not even Andy Levin, of the U.S. House of Representatives had signed on to it. And AIPAC was mortified at the prospect of a Jewish member of Congress signing on. And Levin was as close to signing on as anybody, because I also happen to be close to a lot of the activists and lobbyists who were in Washington from Jewish Voice for Peace. And they work on this bill and support this bill. And PDA supported this bill. I mean, that's where the political dialogue was up on Capitol Hill. You didn't have a single Jewish American member of Congress who had ever signed on to McCollum's bill. But they were mortified that a Jewish member would. And Levin was close to it. And what happened with Levin, of course, is there was a weird situation in Michigan. This happens, of course, about every 10 years, somewhere in the country, right? Lines get redrawn in the state, and you had two incumbents go against each other. And yeah, boy, was it uncanny to have that much money go against, a Jewish former president of a synagogue from, AIPAC, which is a lobby, which, by the way, does have a lot of money comes into it from non-Jews. There is this very activist component, by the way, of Christian Zionism as a force within advocacy for Israel that AIPAC is, broadly speaking, aligned with too. And it's sort of a set of what AIPAC is about. I want to say this too. I actually think, and maybe I'm naive, maybe I have rose colored glasses on, but they've, so we go back to 2022, Gaza, this horror show, the escalation of the horror show in Gaza, because it wasn't good before, but this is off the charts, right? It hadn't happened yet. And they came after, sorry to speak in the first person here, plural, us. They came after the progressives. The left progressive politics in our two-party system is pretty marginal before the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign. And the squad and squad members acknowledge, most of them, not all of them, they were inspired to run by Congress by this incredible success, unprecedented success. You know, guy was the only socialist in Congress for years. A socialist, you know, taking a strong third, as it were, third place in two consecutive presidential cycles. And the progressive movement became stronger in electoral politics than it had been throughout my entire adulthood. Right. And out of, you know, we were sort of, as it were, clotheslined, to use a sort of tackle football metaphor. We were clotheslined. We were shocked at how AIPAC was coming to wipe out the progressive movement. And it was a mortal danger to this emergent and ascendant political movement. And of course, PDA, people don't know, we were actually the PAC that drafted Sanders to run for president. I wasn't the executive director then, but I knew of PDA's work, and it was great. They did that, changed American politics. But they're coming after the squad members. They want to knock the squad members out of Congress. And they were using unparalleled amounts of money. And so we knew going into this cycle that we had to raise consciousness about this and try what we want to do now. And we think, look, nothing is good about what's happened in Gaza. But we have an opportunity to turn the tables on AIPAC in this election cycle. If we return 9 squad members to Congress, I think it can break the spell. And in fact, maybe break the chain is a better metaphor. Because sometimes I talk about AIPAC, Israeli government policy, and U.S. foreign policy, and consider a triangle. Because there's the AIPAC and AIPAC-affiliated lobbying groups, U.S. foreign policy towards Israel, and then Israeli policy in particular towards the Palestinians. What of those three points in the triangle are essential to keep that current status quo in place? And they're all essential. That's how powerful a lobby and how successful a lobby AIPAC is. It holds the American political establishment locked into this blank check support, or has up to now. But they've come for us, as it were, Rose. It's like game on. They're going to come from us, and we're going to beat them now. And believe me, if this was a vote, without this money coming in, we'd win these elections in a landslide. But the money in politics in the United States, it overwhelms constituencies. They pay top dollar, of course, with that level of money for the ads. They can be brilliantly deceptive.
I just want to jump in there because we've got a number of people on the line, and I want to play a couple of clips. Alan Minsky is executive director of the Progressive Democrats of America and one of the original authors of a statement by 100 prominent Jewish Americans. The statement opposes the Israel lobby AIPAC. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. I just want to play a few clips because I think this is just important information to get out. I just want to thank Democracy Now! For these clips. This is Mohammed Sleem, a Palestinian mother in Gaza City who said her son was killed while trying to get aid.
I want what I'm saying to reach the whole world so they can see what Israel is doing to the poor Palestinian people. We have been 6 months. 6 months. They are children. What have they done to deserve this? We are tired. We no longer have energy. The children in the south, in the north, are dying of hunger. What has a baby done to die of hunger?
That is Mohammed Sleem, a Palestinian mother in Gaza City who said her son was killed while trying to get aid. British surgeon Dr. Nick Maynard recently led an emergency medical team at Gaza's Al-Aqsa Hospital. He's been going to Gaza for 15 years. Dr. Maynard is part of a group of international doctors who met with officials at the UN and in Washington, D.C. this week. This morning, he told Democracy Now! This was the worst experience in his medical career. He describes a little girl he and his team tried to care for with severe burns.
Whose burns were so severe that you could see her facial bones through the burns. There was no prospect of her surviving these burns, and we knew she was going to die, but there was no morphine available in the emergency room that day, and that was a frequent occurrence during our stay there. So we knew she was going to die, but she had to die in agony. There was no way of relieving her pain. And what made it even worse, if it could be worse than that, was the fact that there was nowhere for her to die in privacy. She was lying on the floor of the emergency room at Al-Aqsa Hospital. There was nowhere else for her to go. So she died in public and in agony. And we witnessed many other examples like that. And I could spend a lot of time talking about the horrible things we saw. People dying without dignity, without pain relief. And I bore witness to things I would never, ever have expected to have seen in any healthcare setting.
That is British surgeon Dr. Nick Maynard, who recently left Gaza. He's been going there for 15 years. We did a show back in, I can't believe it's been January 10th with Save the Children, about more than 1,000 children in Gaza who've lost one or both legs since October 7th. Today, we're speaking with Alan Minsky, Executive Director of the Progressive Democrats of America, who's one of the original authors of a letter opposing AIPAC. It was signed by 100 Jewish Americans. Alan, we're still getting some emails from people who say, you know, why is Biden still doing this? And I just wanted to highlight a piece I just read in the Washington Post called How Biden Became Embroiled in a Gaza Conflict with No End in Sight. The piece says, on October 27th, 3 weeks into Israel's punishing counterattack in Gaza, top Biden officials privately told a small group assembled at the White House what they would not say in public. Israel was regularly bombing buildings without solid intelligence that they were legitimate military targets. The piece goes on to say Biden's strategy from the outset rested on a central trade-off, that if he showed Israel unequivocal, even defiant support early on, he could ultimately influence its conduct of the war. Some administration officials now concede the strategy is heading toward failure, and in private talks, they voice a striking frustration and uncertainty about how the war will end. So what are your thoughts on this? I mean, every day this isn't getting media attention, but every day there are people who are protesting when Biden speaks or anyone in his staff. They're protesting at the offices of politicians. They're shutting down bridges. So many of these actions are Jewish led, and yet they're not moving Biden. What are your thoughts? Alan? Did we lose Alan?
Oh, shoot.
Alan, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry. I had paused for a second, but it's because I actually want to say something that, you know, I think with the clips you played, where should U.S. foreign policy be? And, you know, look, if you have your eyes open, the horror of what was happening a few days into Israel's attack in terms of, I mean, we saw pancake apartment buildings. What did people think was happening there? These were obviously civilian domiciles. And how do you get so far away from the idea that every human life is sacred? And you know, once the response was clear, and it should have been cut off right away. I mean, we gotta fight to get U.S. foreign policy with all of our power. I mean, also, you know, look, I'm not particularly compelled to consider, you know, the idea that, you know, this whole thing that's happened weakens U.S.'s position in the global system. But if you had stood up to Israel after we saw what the response was, because, you know, Hamas, yes, condemned, it's horrible. Absolutely, what they did on October 7th. But the United States of America doesn't have an alliance with Hamas. We have an absolutely supportive, hyper-supportive alliance with Israel at that point. And it should be ethically incumbent. And we need to have a return to, if there was one thing that was weak in the Sanders campaign in 2016, 2020, as you can imagine, I love Bernie, was that foreign policy really wasn't emphasized much. Because I do think the American public would love to see us have a foreign policy that would never countenance that, that would be led by the idea that if an ally is slaughtering civilians, that alliance and any military should end right there. So, okay, what to say about Biden and why he can't stand up to Netanyahu?
And we have about 2 minutes left. Actually, about a minute and a half.
Darren, you're talking about what I said earlier. Why is APEC so effective? Because every Congress that gets seated, every White House that comes in, they come in having this blank check policy. So it's like APEC gets five aces dealt to it, and then they just make sure nobody shifts outside of it. And, the sort of political fear of God is with all this money that would come against anybody who steps outside of it. Do I think that Andy Levin and Sarah Jacobs and a number of Jewish progressive politicians in Congress, or more or less, and sometimes very progressive politicians, Jamie Raskin, would support Betty McCollum's bill? Yeah, they would. Of course they would. They're good people. They don't want to see. But they're so intimidated by what the hammer that gets dropped. And APEC showed what its game was really at this decade, in the money that was the massive tranches of money that went against Summer Lee and a number of other squad members. Ilhan Omar almost lost her seat last time. And absolutely unprecedented amounts of money. When you hear $100 million, I mean, this is not a bad place. I got two more things to say. $100 million.
Actually, we're almost out of time, Alan.
That's not that much in the presidential race. It's just a fraction of that can overwhelm congressional districts. If I can end with this, Rose. Jewish American Nobel laureate Bob Dylan has a lyric in a song called Every Grain of Sand. And it's like Cain, we now behold a chain of events that I must break. Jewish Americans should consider that reference back to the book of Genesis and the story of Cain and breaking the chain, because we have to do that. We cannot allow this alliance to continue where we are giving a blank check to the slaughter of civilians. And this is what this whole thing is about. So thank you so much, Rose. Fantastic show. Thank you.
Alan Minsky is Executive Director of the Progressive Democrats of America, one of the original authors of a letter signed by 100 prominent Jewish Americans opposing the Israel lobby APAC. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.